Morning, everyone. I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order. And we will begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam. Vice Chair Akam. Minority Leader Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman. Representative Bierman. Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lippertz.
Present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson.
Present.
I think we've also had Representative Akam and Representative Bierman join us if you'd like to.
Yes. Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Quorum is present, and we have minutes from January 28th, 2021. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to look them over?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move approval.
Representative Akam moves approval of the minutes from January 28th, 2021. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Aye. The minutes are adopted. We have a few bills that we're going to try to take up today. And the first up is House File 70 with Representative Freiberg. Representative Freiberg, welcome to the committee. Would you like to move that House File 70 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's also a DE2 amendment. I think it might be good to move that first. It would just put the bill in the shape I'd like. The main thing it would do is place the revolving loan fund in the Office of Enterprise Sustainability at the Department of Administration.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. I will move the DE2 amendment. Any discussion to the DE2?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Does this amendment now force it to go to GovOps?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. The Government Operations Committee no longer exists. It does require it, however, to go to the State Government Finance Committee, which is where it's going.
Excellent. That's what I was just double checking. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion to the DE2? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The DE2 is adopted. Representative Freiberg, please tell us about your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 70, as amended, would establish a revolving loan fund for building improvements that will reduce energy and water consumption in state-owned buildings. These are improvements that are really important. They save money, but they are often overlooked because the agencies generally have limited operating funds. All cabinet-level agencies would be eligible for the loans. The bill sets out an application process, requires agencies to repay the loan, and repurposes the productivity loan fund, which is currently empty. That's just a very quick summary. With here with me with more information to testify is Ann Hunt, who is the director of the Office of Enterprise Sustainability at the Department of Administration.
Ms. Hunt, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Chair Long. I'm Ann Hunt. I'm the director of the Office of Enterprise Sustainability with the Department of Administration, and I'm glad to be here today to talk, share with you a little bit about the Office of Enterprise Sustainability and the need for a revolving loan program. In 2017, Governor Mark Dayton established the enterprise sustainability effort through an executive order. This effort was then reaffirmed by Governor Tim Walz in 2019. The executive order outlined kind of four key elements. It set six sustainability related goals, which we'll talk a little bit about later. It established the enterprise sustainability governance model. It directed state agencies to participate in the model and outlines their responsibilities. And it also then established the Office of Enterprise Sustainability to track and report on all the progress towards the sustainability goals and provide technical assistance to agencies and help develop best practices. So here are the sustainability goals. These were developed with a group of stakeholders from various state agencies across the enterprise dating back to 2016. Or I should say, when I refer to the enterprise, I'm referring to the 24 cabinet-level state agencies. You can see each of these goals are ambitious, and they're nuanced, and I could spend a lot of time talking about them. But we don't have that today. Some of them, as you see, are absolute. Some of them are relative, and they have various goal ending dates. I wanted to call out in particular the goal for energy is to reduce energy consumption per square foot by 30% by 2027. For water, the goal is to reduce water use by 15% by 2025. And then in the greenhouse gas emissions, our goal aligns with the Next Gen Energy Act to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2025. Arguably, this might be the most important goal, but we put effort into all six of them because they are interrelated. Just briefly, I wanted to touch on our governance model. This model borrows from that used by the private sector leaders. There was a team that of agency folks that looked at all of the various different statutes that related to sustainability for state agencies, and then were able to kind of produce this structure. As you can see, it starts with the leadership from the governor and lieutenant governor. There's a steering team of eight cabinet members. There's our office to provide the technical assistance. We have working groups on things like greenhouse gas emissions, water, and energy. There's a sustainability coordinator from each agency, and then they help drive the implementation at the agency level. This is our sustainability mn.gov website. If you haven't taken a look at it, we don't have time to walk through it today, but I really encourage you to take a look at it. It's a public dashboard that shows how every agency and the overall state is doing towards the progress towards goal. You can view the information by agency or by goal area. This level of detail, I can't emphasize this enough, is unmatched by any other government sustainability reporting effort in the United States. As you can see, cumulatively, we've helped the state avoid $45 million in costs since 2008. Please do check out our website. I wanted to just talk a little bit about how we're doing on progress towards the goal. The enterprise has reduced energy intensity by 9% from our baseline, resulting in a 35% progress towards our 30% energy intensity reduction goal. And that's shown in the radial in the middle of this chart. We saw a drop from the baseline year to 2017, but since 2017, we've seen more severe winters resulting kind of an increase in energy use to heat the buildings. It will take a substantial investment in energy efficiency and conservation to help us meet this goal. Next. The enterprise has reduced its water use by almost 4%, resulting in a 24% progress towards goal towards the goal of 15% water reduction. The reduction has come from kind of three areas, three main sources, work done by Military Affairs, the DNR, and the Met improvements at the Met Council's wastewater treatment facilities. Going forward, agencies are going to need to be doing audits of their landscaping sprinkler systems, installing low-flow fixtures, and again, the Met Council has some significant planned investments for upgrading their wastewater treatment facilities. And I just wanted to touch on this greenhouse gas emissions goal. The enterprise has reduced greenhouse gas emissions from its operations, that's buildings and fleets and operations, including the wastewater treatment, by 18% and achieving a 61% progress towards the 30% greenhouse gas reduction goal. It's important to note that this does not include the GHG greenhouse gas emissions associated with the closed landfill program. The long-term reduction has come from three main sources. The reduction of greenhouse gas emissions from the electricity sector, or the decarbonization of the electricity sector. It's also been from the consolidation of square footage in buildings and improved energy efficiency in the buildings. Moving forward, agencies are going to have to make substantial improvements in the energy efficiency and conservation in their existing buildings. They're going to have to build more energy efficient new buildings under the SB 2030 program, which is requiring now new buildings be 80% more efficient than the 2003 average building. And incorporating more on-site renewable and then purchasing more renewable energy like the Renewable Connect. Fuel switching is also going to be an important strategy kind of moving forward for the agencies. As Representative Freiberg mentioned, when agencies' budgets are tight, they will choose fulfilling their mission over doing the energy and water conservation improvements. We need additional funding options to help agencies improve their energy efficiency, which makes their operations more sustainable and avoids energy costs. One solution is appropriating money for a revolving loan fund that agencies could access to make these needed improvements. House File 70 establishes the State Energy Building Energy Conservation Improvement Revolving Loan Fund for building improvements that would reduce energy and water consumption in state-owned buildings. This is a fund that's modeled after 31 other states when we did our research. As a former sustainability director for the city of St. Paul, I was very familiar with a revolving loan. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman established a $1 million revolving loan program in 2009 for the city of St. Paul. It was so successful that in 2019, Mayor Melvin Carter increased it to $5 million and has pledged to install LED lights in every city building. So all cabinet-level agencies would be eligible to apply for the funds, and requests would be reviewed by our Office of Enterprise Sustainability and recommended for approval to the Commissioners of Admin, Management, and Budget and Commerce. The loan recipient agents would enter into agreements with the Office of Enterprise Sustainability, and they would use their savings from the energy improvements to pay back the loans. And the terms of the loans, the maximum would be for 7 years by statute. These are some of the criteria that we would use to review the loan applications, as Representative Freiberg mentioned. The loan applications, these are some of the things that we would be funding with the loan. It would be LED lighting. It could be digital controls, ground and air source heat pumps, low-flow fixtures. Retro commissioning, the bottom item, is a very comprehensive energy assessment that sometimes agencies would need to be able to look at what costs would be included, say, in a bonding bill. This would really help improve and reduce the cost for the various agencies. It would help the agencies become more efficient and has the added benefit of improving kind of their operational and sustainability and resilience efforts. The agency would be better able to weather bad economic times and while maintaining the level of service that Minnesotans expect from them. Finally, I just wanted to highlight one project that we recently completed at the Capitol Complex, and this would be the type of projects that would be eligible for the revolving loan. The Department of Administration applied for University of Minnesota to the Technical Assistance Program, and we had a mechanical engineering student last summer in 2020 work with the Facilities Management Department to be able to assess the opportunities for retrofitting fluorescent fixtures to LEDs. And you can see there was five projects that were completed totaling about $102,000 for lights, parts, and labor. And it was estimated that there would be savings of $57,000 a year for these projects. And they were also eligible for rebates from Xcel Energy that helped improve the payback on that. So this is the type of projects that, you know, an agency could bundle together a couple of LED lighting projects in their facilities and then be able to apply for a loan. And so thank you so much. And I'm available for questions if we need to.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt. We do have a question. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. I had to find my mute button. Just a quick question to the testifier. So essentially, you're asking for $15 million with this fund. And it's going to be a revolving loan fund. So how is the funds generated through the agency to pay back to the fund?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair Long, Representative. The loan would be structured from the energy savings that the agency had from the improvements. So, for example, if we determined that the project would pay for itself in 3 years, the loan might be structured, would be going to effect, and it would be a four-year loan. They would see some immediate cost savings, and they would use those savings in their budget to repay the loan.
Representative Swazinski, do you have a follow-up?
So it's $15 million. I'm guessing if you have a goal of doing this state through all the state buildings across the state, what is the total cost to do this in all state buildings across the state?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair Long, Representative, I don't have that specific information. We have all of this. There's currently 3,500 state buildings over 5,000 square feet that are in the B3 system, so they've been benchmarked. About 70% of them have been identified as needing improvements made at them. So these are throughout the entire state of Minnesota. There's 10 state agencies that own buildings themselves. And so these are the kinds of projects that we would want to be able to do. Some of them would need, for example, some of the campuses need to be metered. They might have just one meter that is electric meter for operating for several buildings, so they aren't able to really determine what the energy consumption might be in a specific buildings and improvements. So meter building up, building automation systems would be another kind of piece that they would be able to do. And some of those projects might be a couple hundred thousand dollars to do that project.
Representative Swazinski, did you have another follow-up?
Why not just come back to the well? I mean, there's hundreds of millions of dollars in this account for RDA. Why would you create a revolving? Why wouldn't you just create grants to these agencies?
Representative Long, Representative Zinski. A revolving loan is a very cost-effective way to be able to do this. The money would be there in perpetuity for doing energy efficiency projects. So my experience with the city of St. Paul, we owned 12 parking ramps. We initially converted from high pressure sodiums to fluorescent bulbs because at the time LEDs weren't really available. They were able to finance those improvements with the revolving loan. And then paid that back. Then the money was available for the fire department to make improvements for its facilities or the libraries or the parks and recs department. It's a much better way to be able to do it than, say, giving them direct grants.
Representative Swazinski, did you have maybe one last question and then we'll go to the public testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just kind of just getting the idea. So would like just putting insulation in a ceiling, would that be thing that's, how would that application work to that 1.5 employees? How would that process work? Like, hey, I want to put insulation in the ceiling of this building. Would that work on new construction? So if you build a brand new building and wanted to go above and beyond maybe what was bonded for, would that process work, or would it only exist under existing buildings?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair Long, Representative, the intent of this would be for existing buildings. And things like building envelope improvements probably would be more appropriate in the capital investment process. These are, again, for our things that are going to pay for themselves in less than 7 years. So I think we had a long list of things. We would also included the improving water fixtures. So they might be toilets, but in a number of the facilities, we have 24-hour operations where people are taking showers. So they would both get a water savings benefit and an energy savings benefit if they had more efficient low-flow shower heads, for example.
And Mr. Chair, just one last real quick question for the testifier.
Very quick, Representative Szczesny. We have
sorry, Mr. Chair.
Testifiers and two more bills.
Yeah. So if, you know, because of the state buildings have had a lot less use in the last year, and water consumption and energy consumption, my guess has been lowered in heat because most folks are officing from home, what savings have been held in the last 24 months since the pandemic has started with state agencies and buildings and water usage? What actual savings has been seen from, let's say, 2019 numbers to 2020 numbers across the board?
Ms. Hahn.
Obviously, it's a big question. If you would like to provide that, that would be great to the committee.
Chair Long, Representative, our office is just now starting to analyze all of the data from 2020. We get millions, as I said, we're keeping track of the energy and water use in 3,500 buildings across the state. It will take us several months to be able to analyze those things. We'll have that data available probably later this summer. We have had a number of facilities that are 24-hour operations. So the Corrections, Human Services, Veterans Affairs, all of those have continued to operate and even during the pandemic.
Thank you, Ms. Hahn. Representative Franson, would you mind if we do our public testimony and then I'll come back to you for the first question? Ms. Hunt will be available for questions for after that, if that would be all right with you.
Actually, I just have a quick question. So I thought the committee time was for members to ask questions, and it seems like we members are not able to actually ask questions as much as we would like because the committee hearing is filled with so much testimony. And in order to flesh out these ideas, members need to be able to have the chance to ask questions so we can make informed decisions.
Representative Franson, we only have 3 hours a week to meet. We can't meet very often in evenings or weekends or on Fridays, and so we do have a limited amount of time. I try to give as much flexibility as we can for member questions. Representative Szczesny got to ask six, so I think we're doing as best we can. We have two public testifiers now. Jamie Fitzke is our first one. Ms. Fitzke.
Hi, thank you, Chair Long, Representative Freeburg, and members of the Energy Committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Policy Manager for the Center for Energy and Environment, providing brief testimony in support of House File 70. CEE is a nonprofit based in the Twin Cities with over 40 years of energy efficiency experience in research and development, education, program development, implementation, and policy. We greatly appreciate seeing legislation that would establish a revolving energy efficiency loan for state buildings. Energy efficiency and energy conservation is the most cost-effective energy resource we have and should be actively implemented to reduce building operation costs and increase space usability. Establishing a revolving loan for state buildings will provide resources to continually implement and invest in cost-saving efficiency that otherwise might be delayed or not take place. These energy efficiency improvements reduce building operating costs and, in turn, reduce costs to taxpayers. We would ask the author to consider conforming to or citing existing 216B statute definitions, in particular referencing energy conservation and energy efficiency, to avoid confusion or irregularities. Excuse me. Thank you for all who worked on this bill and hope there is continued support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzke. Next, we are hearing from Rick Evans. Mr. Evans, please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I just want to note, because I don't think it's been mentioned, and for some of the committee members that particularly are new to the committee, as you're considering this bill, please note that the source of the funds in the bill, it comes exclusively from Xcel Energy customers. I don't offer that as a recommendation for or against the bill. I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of the fact that Xcel Energy customers are the ones who are providing the money for this program. The other thing I'd just like to say is, we're aware of this bill, obviously, and there's three or four other energy conservation focused bills that may be introduced by members that we've had stakeholders bring to us over the course of the last few weeks. And we want to be mindful of the fact that Xcel Energy currently runs a very successful conservation program under current law. We've been doing it for many years, a couple of decades at least, and it's been very successful. Just the programs that have been implemented in the last 10 years have saved over 70 million megawatts of energy use by our customers. This program, currently Xcel Energy spends about $100 million, a little more than that, on these programs over the course of the year. The program is conducted through the Department of Commerce with a very rigorous examination of the cost and benefit that comes from each of these programs to make sure that the money is being spent efficiently. And then, as you're all aware, you recently passed the Representative Stevenson's ECO bill, which not only increased the goal of energy savings for Xcel Energy, but also provided some additional strategies for achieving those goals. So I raised this just because as the committee considers House File 70 and the other conservation measures that may come before you during this session, we would encourage you to look at all of these programs together, including the current SIP program, to make sure that they're consistent, that they're not duplicative, that they maximize the use of resources available for conservation. We look forward to working with Representative Freiberg, the entire legislature, authors of other bills that may come along, and with the stakeholders, some of whom have testified here today, to improve the programs that we have and to make sure that they're working together. And so I just wanted to kind of put a marker down for looking at conservation. Committee, I know, is aware we have very robust programs going on now. And as we add programs to it, we would like to, consider how they all work together. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Discussion to the bill. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Evans. Does Xcel Energy, obviously it's a utility, do they also sell water?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, no, we do not have a water utility.
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Rick Evans, do you currently do anything with water efficiency in any other areas of either your utility or when you do an RDA projects or anything like that other than hydroelectric dams, I suppose? But,
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swazinski, not for customers. I mean, this gets out of, off the topic a little, but, we do use a tremendous amount of water in many of our power plants, and that's, a constant focus of how we're using the water in the power plants. But obviously that's beyond the scope of this bill.
Representative Swazinski.
I have no further follow-up.
Representative Francis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Evans. So could you just explain how much Xcel rate payers pay every year into the RDA and whether that is a flat amount or does that amount increase every year?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, the RDA is paid based on the number of storage casks for spent nuclear fuel that are stored at our two nuclear power plants. They don't necessarily go up every year, but they go up frequently as more fuel is taken out of the plants and added. The money is divided between what we are paying for old legacy programs from earlier Renewable Development Fund and what we deposit with MMB. I think our deposit with MMB this year was something around $16 million. But the total amount that our customers pay for the legacy programs plus the new is approaching, I probably shouldn't say, but it's $30 to $40 million. I'll get that to the committee and we'll distribute that. I should have that on the top of my head, but I haven't really looked at it in a while, so I've forgotten what the number is.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain to me, so I'm new on the Energy Committee, super excited to be a part of the team here. So could you just explain exactly what the RDA was intended for?
So, So I'll allow the question, but we will have subsequent hearings on the renewable development account when we get to budget hearings. So if it could be brief, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen. The RDA was set up in 1994 as a part of legislation that allowed for on-site storage of spent nuclear fuel. The purpose of it was to enhance the development of renewable energy as an alternative in Minnesota.
And one final question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you. And Mr. Evans, could you inform us how many conservation projects does Excel do for units of government?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, I think as Ms. Hunt mentioned, we our current SIP program, Conservation Improvement Program, is available to government as it is to all of our customers. And I believe she mentioned that in some of their projects, they have used those programs to help with the cost of their improvements.
Representative Franzen.
And so, Mr. Evans, is it possible to give us, I'm sure Excel keeps track of that. Is that possible that you could share that information with the committee?
Mr. Evans.
I don't, Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, I don't know that we break it down by customers in that way, but I will certainly check and I will let you know.
Thank you.
That would be helpful. Thank you, Mr. Evans. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make a quick comment to the bill. I want to thank Representative Freiberg for bringing this forward. So as someone who's led nonprofits with very tight budgets, you know, we are always very concerned about energy efficiency, wanting to make those improvements in the congregations I've served. And it was difficult to find those funds. So being able to tap a revolving loan fund like this for agencies where budgets are also very tight, I can see how that would make a huge difference. I was thinking about, boy, it would be helpful if we had a denomination revolving loan fund like that to have access to. So I just want to thank you for bringing the bill forward, and I think it's a great idea.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Evans, and if you don't have the information immediately available, if you could get it to us, but part of what was mentioned here is converting and doing retrofit away from fluorescent and going to LED. Aside from rebate programs, can you break down or do you have a number what the actual both power usage and electric cost savings are when you convert from fluorescent to LED?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mecklen, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure I can find that for you and I'll let you know.
Representative Mecklen, do you have a follow-up?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Freiberg, would you like to make any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you as well, Ms. Fitzke and Mr. Evans. So I'm happy to work with the stakeholders as this bill moves forward to address the issues. I'm pretty sure we can reach a conclusion. I've looked into it a little bit already after receiving an email from Mr. Evans yesterday. So appreciate the comments and glad to get input on this bill. And I welcome the support of members to move this along in the process.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And thank you for bringing this bill forward and Ms. Hunt for your leadership. That this is a really important topic to try to help reduce energy and water usage and costs across our enterprise and a proven solution that we've seen work in cities in Minnesota and across the country. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I renew my motion that House File 70 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections, and the clerk will take the roll and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Minority Leader Swedzinski.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bowe.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 10. 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred to State Government Finance and Elections. Thank you very much, Representative Freiberg. The next bill we have up is House File 257 with Representative Wasliwick. Representative Wasliwick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will move that House File 257 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And I understand you also have an author's amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's the A3 amendment, and it does a couple of things. It tweaks some language around non-generating utilities that buy from multiple wholesalers or G&Ts so that they can recover the net metering fees proportionally from all of those sources. And then there's a little tweak in there to allow customers of utilities to have access to their electricity usage data. So those are the two things that are being added.
Thank you for the explanation. So I will move the author's amendment A3 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Is there any discussion to the A3? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wasliwick, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I first introduced a bill similar to this after a constituent contacted me several months into my first term as a legislator, concerned that their homeowners association did not allow them to install solar panels on their roof. The current version of the bill with the author's amendment has three sections to it. The first section would allow people who own a single family dwelling in a community with a homeowners or community association to install solar panels on their roof. This only applies to owners who are responsible for the maintenance, repair, replacement, and insurance on the roof of their dwelling. There's also in the language, there's a list of sort of things that HOAs can put restrictions on or conditions they can put on to that process. And then that's the first section of the bill. The second part is that non-generating utilities piece that I mentioned that was part of the amendment. And then the third and final part of the bill makes changes to allow customers of a utility to have access to their electricity usage data. So that's a brief summary of the bill. There are a couple testifiers I know who are going to speak to the bill as well.
Great, thank you.
Peter Teaglin from Mencia.
Thank you, Representative Wasliwick. So, Mr. Teaglin, if you could introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Long, Representative Wasliwick, and representatives of the committee. My name is Peter Teaglin, and I'm a policy associate for the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MNSEA. We represent 115 different solar companies or solar-related businesses in the state. Those companies employ over 4,200 Minnesotans across the state of Minnesota. I'm here today on behalf of our members to voice our support for this bill and to thank the committee for bringing it forward. This bill advances personal freedoms and property rights and promotes fairness and competition in energy markets. The right to generate one's own electricity is a value important to the citizens of Minnesota and one that I'm happy to see highlighted today by the committee. There are three provisions to this bill as amended. The first is an expansion and protection of property rights that will allow homeowners to improve their homes to generate their own electricity. The second promotes fairness for Minnesota's electric co-ops and munis that competitively source wholesale electricity. The third will enshrine in law a customer's right to their own usage data. This bill is really about the balance between an individual's property rights on the one hand and a private association's aesthetics on the other. Every other homeowner in Minnesota has the right to generate their own electricity with solar and to improve the value of their home. In fact, a study by Zillow, the real estate app, shows that the market values homes with solar by over more than 4% than those without. Maybe that's because the price of solar panels have come down an enormous amount over the last decade, or even because panels have gotten much more attractive since the 1970s. Whatever the reason, the market values solar, and homeowners should be able to improve the value of their homes. So this bill treats solar like a lot of other architectural additions to one's home in a homeowners association. The association can come up with a reasonable alternative, but can't outright prohibit it. 27 other states, including Iowa and Wisconsin, agree and have laws like this one. The bill says that the right to make your own energy is, within reason, more important than a private association's aesthetic preferences. We believe that this balance is the right one. The second provision promotes fair market competition. Right now in Minnesota law, if and only if your non-generating electric co-op or muni purchases energy from only one wholesale provider, it can treat exports of energy from net metered customers as purchases made on behalf of its single source wholesaler. But co-ops and munis that buy from more than one wholesaler cannot. This provision allows them to treat net energy purchases proportionally to those made at wholesale. It promotes competitive sourcing of electricity and the energy independence that comes from net metering. The third provision simply means that customers have a right to request and receive appropriately detailed data about their own energy usage. The data is really just a description of how much and when a customer is buying energy from their own utility. For example, demand build customers would want to know when their own energy usage is highest so they can put in place a distributed generation resource like solar or storage that is most efficient both for their own use and for that of the electric grid. Customers have a right to their own electric data, and we should settle that right in law. This bill protects property rights for Minnesota homeowners. This bill promotes competition and energy choice in rural electric cooperatives and municipal power agencies. And this bill ensures that customers can have access to their own utility data. Thank you to the committee and to Representative Wozniak for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Teglin. Representative Wozniak, would you like to introduce your second testifier?
Next on the list is Griffin Dooling from Blue Horizon Energy.
Mr. Dooling, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Chair Long, representatives, thanks for having me today. My name is Griffin Dooling. I'm the CEO of Blue Horizon Energy. We are a commercial and industrial solar developer, an energy storage developer across the upper Midwest. Our base of operations is here in Minnetonka, Minnesota, and this is our primary market, but we also operate in all the adjacent states as well. I'm here to speak on any of the issues you have questions about, but primarily I want to focus on the question of utility data, just to illuminate how that specifically works and where the value is for the energy consumer in that provision. Specifically, this utility data involves interval data around the 15-minute periods throughout the day when you're using power. This is going to be most impactful for commercial and industrial consumers. And this data is used by the utilities today across the state to generate demand billing and other billing attributes for how the actual energy charges for those consumers are levied. Many utilities have been cooperative in providing this data to their customers upon request so that they can evaluate their energy consumption. But some have raised the argument that this is proprietary data and should not be released. Ultimately, as Peter said, this comes down to a property rights issue. This is data that's developed by the consumer in their facility, in their operating their business, and having access to this data in an efficient way will allow them to appropriately evaluate energy efficiency solutions that includes solar, that includes battery storage, but that also includes any other sort of evaluation they may do, LED lighting. They may decide to modify their shifts or their production schedules in their facility, the way they use different machines. And ultimately, the goal is to help these businesses be more profitable and resilient so they can continue to grow and expand and hire more Minnesotans and hire more people and invest more in their communities. Having access to this data does not create any issue for the utility. It's not an expense. It's data which is already in the system and has been generated and recorded. And providing it to the energy consumer merely allows them to more appropriately evaluate how their facility uses power. So this will open a lot of opportunities for those consumers, and happy to speak to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Dooling. Representative Wozniak, would you like to introduce your final testifier?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Final testifier is Mr. Willie Fox. He's a constituent of mine and the person who reached out to sort of start this process with this legislation. So,
Mr. Fox, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Well, thank you for inviting me here today. I'm Willie Fox. I'm a resident in the city of Hugo. Renewable energy has always been important to me. It's always just made sense. Solar power is clean and unlimited. Independence is important to me, and that includes energy independence. I drive an all-electric car. My dream is to power my car direct from the sun as it charges in my garage. My home was built in 2019, and my neighborhood has an HOA. I did not understand the full impact of the HOA until I attempted to install solar panels. I worked with a local solar installation company, came up with a plan. Measurements were taken, diagrams created, full details included. We dotted the I's, crossed the T's. Plan was submitted, and the HOA rejected it. The official response is that the plan does not conform to the exterior appearance architectural standards set forth by the developer and builders of the association. Now, the architectural standards document does not mention solar panels specifically, so I made some additional inquiries. Over the last year and a half, I have spoken with my association, my builder, other builders, and the master developer. Most common response is this will not be allowed. Second most common response is this decision is up to someone else. I consider myself to be a reasonable person, so I kept looking for a reasonable answer. I was eventually told the aesthetic may not be visually pleasing to other residents. I was also told installation is not allowed because it may impact insurance and warranty for the roof. Now, these two concerns are valid. I certainly want to respect my neighbors as well as fully insure all aspects of my home. Unfortunately, I was not given the opportunity. My solar panel installation plan was simply rejected, and I have no current path forward. A letter to my representative was my last idea. I never considered legislative action would be necessary, but here I am today. I'm happy to speak in support of HF 257. The guidance is needed and appreciated to ensure the well-being of all parties involved. Solar panel installation is not a new idea, and other communities and other states have successfully adopted similar standards. This action is reasonable and responsible. The guidance makes sense. Just as renewable energy, to me, is reasonable, responsible, and just makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fox, for sharing your story and being with us in the committee today. We have a few questions, and then we will go to public comment. We had a number of individuals sign up for a public comment on this bill before our meeting today. Representative Munson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and to the testifiers. I think it's really important that we understand the history of installing solar panels on houses. And there are so many lawsuits because of the blight to the community that this caused and because of concerns from homeowners, because solar panels contain toxic chemicals like cadmium and lead that when the panels can crack or break down can create toxic pollution in the yards and you know, in the neighborhood. And this is especially important when you have houses together that have a shared well. This is why the solar community gardens were created in the first place, so that you could still power your electric car from your solar panels, but it would be at a different location, not in the community. This is a private contract that people, you know, they wanted to be in a neighborhood where the houses would not be blighted, where people couldn't put up wind turbines or solar panels on their house, but they could put them together in a community and together have solar power. And that's why we have community solar gardens in the first place. The toxic chemicals that are in most of these solar panels are very real, especially in the northern states that have the freeze-thaw conditions in the wintertime. I have great concern over this bill because it does undo what so many people came together and created these neighborhood associations for in the first place. And to Representative Wozlawick, I would ask that you would maybe accept an oral amendment on your bill. On the original bill, I haven't figured it out with the amendment, but on line 1.15, it says the section applies to single-family dwellings, whether attached or detached, where the dwelling owner is responsible for maintenance, repair, placement, and insurance of the roof. But even in a community where you have attached units, the owner is still responsible for replacing the roof, but they collectively are. So I think it's really important to call out that this should read that it's directly and solely responsible because all members of the community would be responsible for repairing a roof if they have an organization that pays for that, indirectly, and then your bill doesn't call that out. So, putting solar panels on a roof does cause damage to the roof, and it adds to the expense of all homeowners in the community. And so I think it's important to call that out to be separate. But I understand the concern where people want to put these panels on the roof, but it's it really goes against the whole reason why the solar community gardens were started in the first place, and doesn't address all of the toxic chemicals that are in these panels that can leach out if there's a hailstorm or a tornado or just the natural breakdown of these panels.
Representative Wasserman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Munson, thank you for that comment. It's certainly something we can think about. There is some work to be done some of this language, so we'll keep that in mind and look forward to your support of my PFAS legislation because you're so concerned about toxic chemicals.
Representative Spasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just wait till after all the public testimony for my questions.
Thank you. We'll come back to you then. Looks like other hands have gone down as well. All right, we have four testifiers who have signed up ahead of time. And first is Jonathan Edmondson. Mr. Edmondson, please introduce yourself for the committee and begin.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Edmondson. I'm an electrical engineer. I live in the city of Blaine. We live in a wonderful community called the Lakes, and we've actually lived here for about 15 years and just recently moved into our second home in the neighborhood, which we plan to be in for the next 30 to 40 years. We have the hope of installing solar on our own house. We want to realize long-term financial savings, which we estimate to be $50,000, and also estimate 400 metric tons of CO2 over the lifetime of the system. We would not be able to realize these savings through a community solar garden. We're planning to install all black panels that would minimize any aesthetic impacts. Since we do have dark asphalt shingles, these would blend in quite nicely. The Lakes Development is a large community consisting of over 2,000 homes. There's a master association that's subdivided into sub-associations. We submitted a request to the HOA, which was over 4 months ago, and after a couple weeks, the sub-association recommended a denial of our request due to aesthetic concerns with the panels being visible from the street. The master HOA has yet to issue a final verdict. They do not have any guidelines in solar on any of their architectural forms. Being a long-term resident, electrical engineer with knowledge of solar, and one of the first homes looking to go solar, I requested to be involved in these discussions and even offered to volunteer my help in drafting reasonable guidelines for the community. However, there's been low to no response to my requests. I've yet to receive any indication of if my install will be allowed. I do believe the HOA should be able to put in place reasonable guidelines around solar energy systems. Panels not extend beyond the peaks or edges of the roof. Modern all-black panels, painted conduits, blended with the house, following national and local electrical codes. These are all reasonable guidelines that can minimize aesthetic impacts and ensure safety. This bill would not interfere with HOAs from establishing reasonable guidelines such as these. However, it is not reasonable for homeowners to experience excessive delays while HOAs make little to no progress adapting their guidelines to allow for solar. More importantly, HOAs would not be imposing unreasonable, they should not be imposing unreasonable guidelines that would significantly impact the efficiency or the cost of the system. This includes restricting panels to rear-facing roof surfaces when it would significantly reduce efficiency, or requiring less reliable solar shingles that would significantly increase the cost. 1 in 4 Minnesotans live in neighborhoods with HOAs, and these are prime locations for residential rooftop solar, but typically less tree shading. In the 21st century with Minnesota's clean energy goals, we should ensure homeowners have the ability to achieve their goals of producing clean energy and realizing long-term financial savings by ensuring HOA guidelines are reasonable and not overly restrictive. I hope my HOA is motivated to allow for this system in my community. However, I have personally experienced excessive delays and do fear unreasonable restrictions will be imposed that make it impractical to install solar in my home. I sincerely hope you'll support this bill. It will, with the falling cost of solar, it will significantly help homeowners who would like to invest in their home and want access to clean energy. This will help support local solar installers and open new markets to them. It will contribute to Minnesota's goals for increasing clean energy. I do not believe this will unduly restrict HOAs from ensuring some minimal guidelines can be followed so that our communities can remain beautiful places to live. I thank you for your time and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Edmondson. Next, we'll hear from Nancy Simmet. Ms. Simmet, please introduce yourself and begin.
Hi, my name is Nancy Simmet. I have lived in Eagan, Minnesota for over 40 years. I moved into my current townhome in August of 1999. It was a new development of 35 homes. These are units that are detached townhomes and do not share any common walls. During the summer of 2020, I heard of the incentives that were being offered to put solar panels on the roofs of your home. Due to an interest in the environment and the fact that COVID gave me nothing else to do, I had time to research, so I dug in. I gathered information on solar heating, solar installations, and solar companies. I decided that the company iSolar was the best match for me. Why? It was one of the companies approved by Solar Installers in Minnesota, SCIA. Also, it is a local company based in Ember Grove, Minnesota. That was big. And it's a family-operated company, which was important to me since I come from a family with a family company. I worked with Justin from iSolar, and he put together a comprehensive package that met my townhouse specifications. What I learned was my townhouse was perfect for solar panels. It faces the right way and it works well. Next, I approached my HOA board to apply for approval. I forwarded the iSolar information and filled out the HOA application form that they require for outside changes or construction. I submitted all the information on October 13th, 2020. I received my rejection email the following day, October 14th, 2020. Basically, no discussion between the board members or with me. Just following what had been done in the past with the 1999 bylaws. Using Section 8.1 of Oak Point of Eagan Homeowners Association Handbook, and I quote, restrictions on alterations. One of the purposes of this declaration is to ensure that those parts of the unit which are visible from exterior be kept architecturally attractive and uniform in appearance, end of quote. I'm going to end this with how disappointed I was and still am in this rejection. I believe in renewable energy and that the consequences of not moving forward are real. I believe Minnesota can be a leader in renewable energy in the renewable energy field by developing businesses and manufacturing jobs to meet our future head on. I believe with proper restrictions that townhome owners have a right to put solar energy panels on their roofs that is architecturally attractive and indeed an update that improves the association as a progressive environment in which people want to live. Since the rejection, I ran and got voted in on my Oak Point Association board. So now I'm a board member and I look forward to hearing positive outcomes of this bill going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Next, we're hearing from Patrick Farnham. Mr. Farnham, please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for your time today. My name is Patrick Farnham, and I'm a senior project manager at Cedar Creek Energy. We're a solar development and installation company based in Blaine. As a project manager, I'm involved with residential projects from start to finish. When dealing with homeowners who are part of an HOA, my team and I have to navigate additional hurdles to get their system installed and operational. This can mean anything from filling out applications and submitting them to the HOA's architectural review board to meeting with the HOA face-to-face and pleading on behalf of our customers. In my experience, I've encountered multiple HOAs who will flat out refuse to approve a member's application to install solar on their home, sometimes with and sometimes without bylaws to back up their decision. We're a relatively small company at Cedar Creek, and we've been seeing steady growth over the last 2 years. But each time an HOA shuts down a potential project, we lose the work and the momentum that we really need in order to continue growing and hiring new employees. This year, for instance, we have a goal of adding on an additional crew to our residential team. Removing restrictions like the ones that HOAs can mandate will help companies like ours continue to grow. It's also important to note, and as a couple others already have, that over half the states in the country have already adopted laws that protect a homeowner's desire to install solar on their home, regardless if they're part of an HOA or not. Two of our closest neighbors, Wisconsin and Iowa, are among them. By passing HF 257, this will move Minnesota back into line with our neighbors. keep us on pace to meet our state mandated renewable energy goals, bolster small local businesses, and allow Minnesotans to choose their own clean energy future. Thank you again for your time. If anyone has any questions or would like to see some photos of recent installations, I'd be happy to share those as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Farnham. Our last public testifier is Stephanie Furr. I hope I said that right. Ms. Furr, please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 257. I live in Carver, Minnesota. My family moved back here from Colorado about 4 years ago. My father lives in southwestern Minnesota, where I grew up, was born and raised.
And if you could just state your name for the record, please.
Oh, Stephanie Furr. Sorry, Stephanie Furr.
Thank
My
you.
Apologies. And I just wanted to say, when we were in Colorado, yes, there are solar panels going up in houses all over. I would walk around, and I noticed it at first, but then it was just fine. When I traveled from when I went to college in Sioux Falls, and home, I noticed all the windmills up at first, but then after a while, it was part of the landscape. As I travel along 212, I notice all of the solar panel farms along there. Once again, you notice it at first, but now it's just part of the landscape. We moved here. My husband did extensive work or research on solar panels, and he did the research. He knows what it's all about, and he contacted a few solar companies, and we sent our HOA a request to have them put in our. And while there's no bylaws within the HOA, they do have final say on particular things. We have noticed a few more fences going up in our neighborhood. They did deny our request at the solar panels. And it wasn't because the board actually is very kind. They really do want to do what's best, but they don't want that responsibility put on them to make that decision. And so I did go to a meeting and request that they do a survey. They only got maybe 5 to 10 responses, and it was about half and half in regards to who wanted and who didn't. We have a much bigger community than that, but those are things that people are not necessarily paying attention to. The board had never really had this come up to them before, and so it's something new for them. And so I think that this bill is wonderful in the fact that it really takes that responsibility off of the local board members. We know that aesthetically it looks fine. It looks so much better than what they did in Colorado, where it was just those big honking glasses. These are much nicer looking. And my husband has paid attention to the financial piece of it, and he knows that this will save us money. We really do believe that installing solar panels will be a benefit to everyone. It'll produce, financially it'll benefit. It'll be producing our own clean energy. And we know that our neighbors, once they see it and how it really does not look bad at all, they will probably be very much interested in this for themselves. So thank you.
Thank you so much for coming to the committee today. So that concludes our public comments, and now we'll go to discussion to the bill. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would just be a question to kind of the homeowners. You know, within your HOA, you know, obviously that's a private entity of, you know, people that have kind of come up with a constitution and a board and whatever rules. Are there options within those HOAs to change the regulation? So I know the one testifier said she was just currently elected to that board. Are there avenues within your own, you know, obviously we believe in local control. Are there avenues within that board to change those regulations within the HOA, or are there not?
Representative Swazinski, did you want to direct that to an individual?
Yeah, it was the female testifier. Okay. I can't remember her name. Sorry.
Ms. Simmet, question for you.
You know, I just got on the board in November. What I'm finding right now is the solar panels probably isn't the first thing that's on their agenda. I'm finding that they are, and I'm thinking this is probably a lot of different HOAs. It's easier just to let things slide. It's easier to, the woman who just said, you know, they just don't want to make that decision. That's kind of what I feel is happening with my board. I feel like I'm the one with maybe thinks outside the box, and everyone else says, no, we'll keep using that same trash collector because they show up every week. Well, what about other issues? So I'm hoping that by being on the board that we can bring up some of these more environmental things. I also, though, feel that having this bill pass would give me a lot more push in that area. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair, Mrs. Wozinski. And this question would be to Mrs. Simmet or the fellow from Hugo, too. Have you tried in the past and then, you know, to other testifiers, you know, is it just that you that sort of thing? What's the, like, have you tried to change the bylaws locally?
Ms. Simmet, and then we'll go to Mr. Fox. I see his hands up.
I'm going to say again, I just got on the board, so I can't really. I think I'm the first one that has approached solar panels. So there hasn't been a discussion. Since I've been on the board, like I said, we seem to be discussing contracts versus other things. And so I feel that this is going to be a little more work on my part, that if we can change them. To be honest, it's going to take a long process. And again, I'm going to say if the bill passes, I feel like I have a little more say that maybe they'll open it up a little bit. That's my.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Fox.
Yes, thank you. I have pursued any and all avenues. I've contacted the association, the builder, other builders, and the master developer. They all tell me to reach out to one or the other. As no one is able to make the decision on their own. Technically, the area that I live in is not in declarant control yet, I believe is the phrasing of it. And what I was told was that the neighborhood needs to be 80% sold. When I looked around and saw that my neighborhood was 80% sold, I asked again what was the status on it, and I was told that they had just recently opened a new neighborhood for new development, and so I'd have to wait for that neighborhood as well to be 80% sold. So I feel I'm getting the runaround, and I don't expect that will stop anytime soon.
Mr. Fox. Representative Wozinski, did you have one last question, and then we'll have to move on to other questioners?
Yes, just my understanding is that there are potentially options for locals to make the decision. Are cities allowed to do this, or does this have to be a state law?
Who are you directing that question to, Mr. Wozinski?
Well, it would either be, you know, this maybe to Representative Wozelwick, you know, like you represent your area. Are your cities allowed to just do this? Are you, can they ban this particular?
Yeah. Representative Wozelwick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that off the top of my head. I can certainly look into it. What I can say is I live in an HOA, and it can be very, very difficult to change bylaws because you have to have a certain percentage, at least in my HOA, you have to have a certain percentage of residents at a meeting to vote on those bylaws. And so bylaws changes are often very difficult if that's where this particular thing, the particular idea of solar panels would need to be addressed. So I think it sort of answer your question, at least in my HOA, I think it depends on where those regulations or rules would be in which documents in terms of how easy they would be to get changes made.
And then Representative Long, just
I'm going to have to move on.
One last question is, it'll be very brief.
Representative Wozinski, we have three other representatives and we have an amendment.
I know.
I apologize, but we need to move on. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears that the members of the HOAs aren't getting their way through the boards and are asking the legislature to invalidate existing HOA contracts. I'm hearing that really there's not much that's been done. Instead, they're just going straight to the legislature. Article 1 of the Minnesota Constitution, Section 11, says attainders, ex post facto laws, impairing contracts are prohibited. This bill, if passed, does open the state to lawsuits. So when that happens, who is going to pay the state's court's costs and when we are sued because this bill is unconstitutional? So Representative Wozelwick would answer that. You can't actually invalidate contracts through the legislature. And if this bill is passed into law, who's going to pay the lawsuits?
Representative Wozelwick.
So I'm not sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure contract, what language you're using. I live in an HOA, and I've never signed a contract. So I'm not sure maybe I'm just not familiar with the legal language that you're using, Representative Franson, but from my understanding, that's not the sort of relationship that exists, but
the bylaws then.
So I don't have an answer for your question. I don't know if someone else here who's been working on the solar panel issue knows that, but I don't have an answer to that question, but I can certainly look into that for you.
I have another question.
Representative Franson.
Thank you. And since Ms. Walzewick, could you also inform the body how much residential rooftop solar costs per megawatt an hour on average, how much that costs?
Representative Walzewick, that was the question.
Thank you, Representative Franson. And it is Representative Walzewick, not Ms. Walzewick. I can't answer that question, but I think there's probably folks here who can answer that question. I don't have that off the top of my head.
I see a hand up from Mr. Dooling. Mr. Dooling?
Sure. So to Chair Long, Representative Franson, to speak to the question on cost, there's a lot of variables in that calculation, largely based on the type of panel and the type of connection to the roof and sort of the way that the system is designed. So, I mean, in general, you could be looking at, you know, solar on a large-scale industrial facility that costs, you know, $1.20 or something like that per watt to construct. On the high end, you could be looking at, you know, north of $5 or $6 per watt if you have a very complex roof and a very complex selection. Ultimately, it's up to the consumer. The one question, you know, not to get off topic, but one point I would raise in the question regarding sort of the constitutionality of this proposal. The bylaws and sort of the HOAs are organized as corporations under bylaws and under various different structures. And the state, as far as I'm aware, does have the right to dictate the way that different corporations and business entities and nonprofits and various other corporate structures are established within the state. For example, you know, we have certain requirements as a company that we have to adhere to set by the state and the way that we organize under statute. And I would envision that the authority for this sort of a clarification really of the HOA requirements comes from that.
Representative Bill.
Thank you, Chair Long. Actually, just a couple of statements rather than questions, so mine will probably be quicker. I do like parts of this bill, including protecting the rights of consumers to access their energy usage data. But I have served on a HOA board of directors for many years. So, Nancy Simmet, congratulations. Thank you for your service. You're going to find it's a pain in the neck sometimes, but you need people to step forward. Many homeowners associations in my district want to retain local control, and I am a big believer in local control. And in fact, the HOA that I served on their board are actually responsible for exterior maintenance on all of their units, including single family and multifamily. So they definitely want to retain that local control through the covenants and that sort of thing that they have put into place to kind of protect their interests. I also served on the city council for many years, and that community actually restricts or controls rooftop solar within that whole entire community because they own a municipal power utility. So they have concerns about rooftop units coming up and causing issues for the grid. So for local control, I will probably vote no for this, but I did wanted to let you know I like parts of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would appreciate the testifiers. What is, you know, Representative Bowl seemed to list some of the reasons why homeowners associations would refuse the solar installation. But I wish we had a couple of board members here who were part of the rejection that these people received. What, you know, was there just no explanation? Or I would appreciate from the homeowners or from the testifiers, what was the rationale? Was it cosmetic? Was it what Representative Munson said, the breakdown and the potential toxic pollution that could come from these? Or did they give you a reason? So if some of those testifiers or even the business owners, why they're running, you know, it seems like there's a consistent pattern here of opposition from these places. And obviously they have some beliefs or convictions about it. Did they express those to you? And
And if you'd explain some of that rationale.
So I see three hands up. We're probably not going to have time for all three to respond, but I saw Mr. Farnham's hand go up first.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, in response to the question, in my experience with rejections from HOAs, it has almost entirely come down to aesthetics. It's usually module location or location of the modules on a street side of a home, which can be an issue because when you're doing a roof-mounted system, it's extremely important on how you use the best oriented roofs. And if that ideal roof is on a different roof plane than the street side, you can basically cut the production of the system down considerably. Other concerns are also around like conduit and equipment mounted outside. Those can usually be assessed pretty easily, but one last comment is a lot of times these HOAs are run or held under a larger management company, and they hold control of the bylaws. So a lot of times they'll just fall back on those bylaws without a whole lot of, at least from what I've seen, a whole lot of real connection to the homeowners or members in the actual community. Thank you.
Representative Gruenhagen, did you have a follow-up? Or does that answer your question?
Well, I have concerns that this one-size-fits-all state mandate. I really believe in local control. I think if there's a real benefit to homeowners, and when you sign up for a homeowners association, HOA, you know that there's going to be limitations. You know that going in. And now all of a sudden we're supposed to circumvent that and do a one-size-fits-all. I just think I'm going to be a no on this bill, and I understand the intention. But you've got to work locally with your people, and getting on the board like the one lady did is a good way to start influencing the system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mecklen, did you have a question, or can we move to your amendment?
I actually have a quick comment before we get to that. The comment is I have a question for the testifiers that are kind of going through this process. Have any of them considered using these new technologies of solar shingles that don't have the appearance of a solar panel mounted on top of a shingled roof, but rather it's the shingles themselves? There's several products out there. I'm not going to advocate for any one of them, but they are out there. And I'm curious if any of them have proposed that to their HOA that might circumvent some of these complications.
Looks like Mr. Fox wanted to respond. Mr. Fox.
I have looked into this. At this point in time, the companies I've looked into doesn't appear feasible to get it installed currently. I would definitely be looking for it in the future, but I fear that when I place my future application that it would again be rejected, as the HOA has no current language around this topic. My application is simply flatly rejected with really no reason why. So that's why I would look for this HF257 to provide some guide rails. Thank you.
I see three other hands, so there's a lot of interest in responding, but unfortunately we have to move to your amendment, Representative Mecklen. Representative Mecklen, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would. I would like to put forward, hopefully you'll consider, a friendly amendment. To do kind of a similar thing where a political subdivision cannot prohibit the use of natural gas as an energy source to a newly constructed residential property. As we've heard in the past, with the cold winters, I think was testified earlier somewhere, dual fuel is a very important thing. And as a builder, we see this regularly that, whether it be an ice storm or, someone runs off the road, hits a power pole. I think this is a very important thing, and I think it fits, so I would like to ask for a roll call.
Representative Mecklen moves the A4 and asks for a roll call. Representative Wozlewick, would you like to respond to Representative Mecklen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mecklen, I certainly appreciate trying to advance this issue, but I don't think this is a place for it on a bill that's largely focused on solar.
Thank you, Representative Wozlewick. I'll just add that if we're looking for local control today, which is what I'm hearing the theme from the other side, then this is moving in the opposite direction with this amendment. Representative Franson, did you have a comment to the amendment?
Not to the amendment, but I do have a question for Representative Wozlewick, but maybe after the amendment.
Okay. Is there further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, a roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Lead Spaczynski.
Yep.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Yes.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
No. Or I'm sorry, yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippertz.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
Yes.
Representative Munson.
Yes.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion to the bill, Representative Franson.
Yes, thank you. So to Representative Wasowick, so there seems to be quite a few people outside of our hearing room here, or hearing Zoom, that are watching. So I did get a text regarding what I was asking about the lawsuit. So this individual sent a text saying that they signed an agreement with their HOA to enforce consistent anesthesiastic standards, and that is what they want as a private property owner. This individual does not want the state overriding their private contract. This individual said they would be looking to sue. So the question then is, if this person were to sue, or a collective amount of people were to sue, and let's say they win because the bill they feel is unconstitutional, who pays?
Representative Wasley.
Thank you, Representative Franson, for the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know the answer to your question, Representative Franson, so I will follow up on that and get you that information.
One final question.
Representative Franson.
Thank you. Wonderful. Representative Wasowick, and I do apologize for not using your title before. That was just out of practice. So if solar panels are limited in your HOA, have you tried to change the bylaws within your HOA?
Representative Wasowick.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson. So that discussion, we already sort of went through that whole thing. Representative Swidzinski asked a similar question. In my particular HOA, I don't know of any restrictions on solar panels. But as I said earlier, the process in my HOA, and I assume it's similar in other HOAs, to change certain documents that are involved in HOAs, including bylaws, can be a very difficult process because you have to have, again, a certain number of people, sort of a quorum per se, to vote on bylaws changes. So again, from what I know of the bylaws and other documents, it would depend where in those documents these regulations would be and if they even exist. It sounds like from a lot of the testifiers that a lot of them don't even have any sort of rules around solar panels at this point.
Thank you.
Mr. Edmondson would like to respond as well, and then we're going to move to the vote. Mr. Edmondson.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so I am going through the process currently with my homeowners association. They did not have any rules in place. So they are looking at establishing rules, and I've offered to provide assistance in that without them taking no response to that, though, as I mentioned in my testimony. So this can be a very long, drawn-out process to try to do this, especially if it involves being voted into the HOA, so you can try to establish these rules going forward. And the HOAs are there to protect the interests of the residents. It doesn't make sense for an individual homeowner to have to get voted onto the board to personally advance something for their own house. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wasowick, do you have any closing remarks before we move to the vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, just appreciate the opportunity to be here on behalf of my constituent in particular and other folks who are looking for the opportunity to generate their own energy from solar panels in the state of Minnesota. So thank you. Thank you to members of the committee for hearing the bill as well.
Thank you so much, Representative Wasilewicz. And thank you to the public who joined us today and the testifiers. This is clearly an important issue that is not affecting one community. And I at least believe that there's a real interest in individual homeowners having the freedom to put solar panels on their roof, with the ability for homeowners associations to put on reasonable restrictions. That seems like a reasonable outcome and a reasonable individual liberty that we should be protecting. So the chair renews his motion that House File 257, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Representative Minority Leader Swazinski.
Nope.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bo.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins. Representative Holland.
Aye. Sorry.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 noes. Is that correct? Excuse me, there being 9 ayes and 8 noes, motion passes and the bill is re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz, for your presentation today. Members, we do not have time to turn to House File 278, as I had hoped, and so we will be meeting again on Thursday at our normal meeting time. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.